All right, welcome to the podcast. And this is episode two of That's What She Said, or I think episode 20, 122. And this is her story. And so, next couple of episodes, I'm actually launching That's What She Said, which is a new podcast, but I'm going to be posting them on both of the podcasts. To kind of give you a taste of what I'm doing over here. And so you'll have to listen to the first one to kind of get a better idea. This interview, I interview Jen Norix, and I forget her official title, but she's like pastoral candidate in the United Methodist Church. She's also a social worker and a counselor. I think she gives her title actually in the interview for that. And we talk about her faith journey, transitioning from one denomination that she was raised in into another denomination. We also talk about her journey with the LGBTQ community and like how that shaped her, and how it's really shaping her ministry as well. And anyway, I've known Jen for a long time, and it was good to catch up a little bit and then to maybe hear more of her journey. Like some of it I knew, obviously, because we've been friends for a long time, but then even to hear some different parts of her story that have shaped her of who she is and where she's at and how she ended up in this place. So I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. And I am as I'm launching this new podcast, That's What She Said, a podcast about faith and spirituality. I'm looking for your suggestions. So topic suggestions. If there's somebody you want me to interview that has some kind of faith or spirituality aspect, and this does not need to be specifically Christian. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to explore different aspects of faith and spirituality on this podcast. So, if there's somebody you know that you think, man, this would be a great interview, and I'd like to know this about them, or this about or that about them, send me a DM, and we will get them, and connect us also because that helps too, and we will get them on the podcast. I promise you that. So, in the meantime. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing, and have a great day. Freeze. Welcome to the podcast. And so you get to be one of the new guests on the new podcast. First
Wow.
guest on the new podcast.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Wow, first guest.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Anyway, we've been friends for a long time. So I guess I should say that because I don't know how much my listeners know about that, but yeah, we've been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
So Rebecca just turned 24. I think she was a baby, right?
Probably. I mean, I've been married for 21 years and you were at my wedding. So, yeah, and we were in Sunday school class together before that. So, more than 21 years. I
Yeah,
don't
that's crazy.
really feel like we're old enough to to say that, but I guess we are.
Yeah, me either. So, hey, so for the listeners and stuff, will you kind of give a synopsis of what you do next right now for a living, like your social work background and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I have a master's degree in social work. I'm a licensed master social worker in the state of Michigan, and I'm licensed for clinical work and macro work. But I work as a mental health therapist for an agency that caters mainly to LGBTQ clients. So a lot of my clients are transgender, a lot of them are young adults who are sort of figuring out what that looks like for them and sort of working through the process of recognizing that there's something different about them and they're not necessarily sure what it is or what to call it or what the label is. And
Right.
it's helping them work through a lot of those things. And a lot of them are college students who just like need like mom help, you know, like how to call a doctor and tell them what you need or how to open a bank account or like what an insurance copay is. So in addition to some of that heavy work of like gender stuff, it's also just figuring out, you know, how to help a young adult be a grown up.
That's cool. Do you think that's it's just is that just because your role as a counselor therapist, or do you think is that like you filling a gap for some of them?
Probably filling a gap for some of them. I mean, a lot of them don't have the greatest relationship with their families. You know, every now and then I see somebody who's like pretty well adjusted, whose family is really supportive and accepting, and they don't usually need much from me. But
Yeah.
a lot of the clients that I have, things are tenuous at home. And so I think they don't feel like they know who to ask. I don't know how to do this. And also there's a confidence issue for a lot of them. They don't feel comfortable in their own skin. And so putting themselves out there to ask for things, to advocate for themselves in the world is really, really uncomfortable for them. And so I think that's part of it too. It sort of all ties together.
Yeah. That's cool that you can do that for them too. So you kind of have some of that, the other side of social work still happening, even in your counseling.
Yeah.
So, and you've been a social worker for a long time. I think when we met, I think you'd already finished your master's degree, and kind of was starting the process. And then at some point you felt a call to ministry. So I thought you'd talk, would you just talk about like, when did you really kind of start to sense a call to ministry, and how did you work through all that? Cause it took you a while.
So gradual. I mean, you know, I even look back to when I was a kid and saw the lack of equality of women, you know, and lack of representation as a kid. I was offended by it. And I don't know why. I didn't know why. I have a feeling that that was a lot of it, was that I had a call on my life and didn't know it. But, you know, the first awareness that I had really of a calling was when I was a college student. I was at Olivet Nazarene University, and I was in chapel service, and they had asked, the speaker was talking about people who had a vocation to full-time ministry, and they asked people to come forward and be prayed for if they thought they had a call. And I did go forward, and there were a lot of kids up there. Nobody ever really followed up with me to say, hey, what is this? Let's talk about it. You know, what's going on with you? There just wasn't any follow-up whatsoever. And excuse me, at the Church of the Nazarene at that time, I think only like 1% of ordained clergy were women. And so I never saw any women like, you know, preside over a board meeting or do a wedding or serve communion, none of that stuff. Didn't know any women pastors. And so I had this awareness of God calling me to like help people, but I didn't really know what that meant. And I think that's a lot of the reason I ended up in social work, because I knew that that was a helping profession. So it really wasn't until I started to see women in the pulpit. You know, you were my pastor, and then you brought on Linda as your staff person, another pastor, and seeing the two of you in the pulpit, I think it sort of started to help me to envision what it is that God was calling me to and be able to dream a little bit and to see what women were doing, and that envision myself in that role as well. And I think, you know, in 2017, I read this article by Tara Beth Leach, and she was talking about in her congregation, and she was fairly new to her congregation at Paz Naz at that time. And she was talking about embracing her role as a woman pastor, that, you know, she had said something at the end of her sermon that she was embarrassed by later, because she thought, oh, that really just, I just played my girl card, you know, like my woman side came out, and I would have never seen my male mentor pastors say the things that I just said to my congregation. And she felt self-conscious about it, And God really kind of spoke to her and said, no, I've created you as a woman to be all that you are and lean into that and pastor in that. And so I remember reading that article with tears running down my face. And I think that was really, you know, my awareness that God was like, I can do something with you, you know? And so I talked to you at that time and said, I think I have a call to ministry. And you're like, okay, well, I'll pray for you. And it was really another year then before I really was sure that that's what was God was calling me to. And again, that came through, you know, reading some stuff from other people. I was following Stan Mitchell. And Stan was a pastor at a non-denominational church in Nashville. And when they became affirming, he lost, I think, like 3/4 of his congregation. But he started writing about all the calls and the emails and the messages he was getting from like parents whose kids were coming out or kids who were afraid to come out to their parents. And he was really being asked to sort of be a pastor to those people, to give them, you know, pastoral counseling and wisdom. And so I really had an awareness of like, I was like, I want to be like Stan Mitchell. I want to be the person that people call. And so then I realized that that's really what specifically what God was calling me to. It wasn't just to ministry, but it was ministry to LGBTQ people and their families. That was in 2018. And so that's when I called you again. And you came right over to my house like that night and met with me and my husband and told me to, you know, take some classes. So I got enrolled in the course of study and, you know, went to my first class. And it wasn't even very like pastory. It was like church history class from the apostolic era up to the Reformation. And yet I walked into that class and I knew, I'm like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is absolutely what God is calling me to. So there was no turning back after that.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah. I remember meeting with you guys and stuff and, you know, and I mean, I had seen that evidence anyway before that, but I didn't want my perception to, you know, if bias it or whatever, influence it. And you, so can you talk a little bit about why, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead or not, but one of the reasons, or you've talked about having a call specifically to minister to the LGBTQ community. Can you talk a little bit about like kind of where that came from and then how that ended up feeding into like PFLAG and stuff?
Yeah. Oh man, that's a long story. I'll try and tell the somewhat short version. I could talk for an hour on that. So my uncle, my mom's brother, was gay, and he was sort of estranged from our family, semi-estranged for a long time. And when I was a teenager, he lived in California, so we didn't see him that often. And when he did come to visit, he was always just kind of, I don't know, cranky, a little bit unpleasant to be around. It was never a happy time when he came to visit us. And when I was a teenager, I don't know exactly what was going on in his personal life. I think he had made some really, really bad decisions that landed him in a bad place. And so he left California and he came to Michigan where our family lived. And he moved in with us for a little while and then got a job and got a place near us. And so we saw him a lot. And he had really had a spiritual renaissance, I would say. And so he like joined our church and was really active. He eventually went back to California, but started friendships with different people, you know, became active in his church, was on the church board, you know, just was like planning dinners and missions events and stuff. And so, you know, all through that, I didn't know he was gay. My family never talked about it. I didn't know for sure until I was in my 20s and I finally asked my parents. And actually for a while before that, I laugh now, but I really thought I was the only person in my family who knew he was gay. And then when I asked later, it's like, everybody already knew. We just didn't talk about it. But because I didn't know that about him and nobody had ever confirmed that for me, I saw him, be changed spiritually. You know, he still bore the scars of religious trauma and, other very bad decisions he had made. He saw a lot of his friends die from AIDS in the 80s, which that wasn't his decision, but he made other bad decisions. But he had been through a lot, and he still bore the scars of that. You know, psychosocially, he was never whole and well, I would say. But I saw there was like a joy to him, like sort of that crusty, bitter stuff was kind of gone. And he would walk around like singing his, you know, gospel praise music and have his Walkman on and praising the Lord and just seeing the way that his life was changed meant something to me. It made a big difference to me. And yet he never stopped being gay. You know, he died a couple of years ago and he had someone in his life for like the last 15 or 20 years. And so, you know, I grew up not sure what to make of that because I'm going to church and hearing homosexuality is an abomination and all these terrible things. And yet I'm slowly putting together the pieces of my uncle's journey and going, I don't know that this is true because I'm seeing the fruit of Christ in his life. I'm seeing him be different because of his transformation that came from, you know, really his restarting his relationship with God. So that was a really significant piece to me in trying to make sense of how do you reconcile what you're learning at church versus what you're seeing. You know, basically, I didn't know the Wesleyan quadrilateral then, but now I'm going, okay, so what I was being told about scripture didn't match the experience, right?
Right.
And so that was sort of the beginning for me of trying to figure all of that out. So I went through a long process of trying to discern, you know, what it was that I was supposed to believe or to know. And so that was a long process. I think, you know, I was in a Bible study where people didn't like that I was being too pro-gay. You know, I'm saying that with quotes, air quotes. And at that time, I wasn't even really saying a whole lot other than the church needs to be more loving. They need to be aware that they are alienating a whole subgroup of people who are just missing opportunities to hear the gospel. And people didn't like it. I was saying that. And they, you know, wanted me to say that unequivocally, I believe that, you know, gay marriage was a sin and I couldn't say that and I wouldn't say it. And I for a long time sort of held this position of I don't know what I believe. But after they pushed me and really challenged me, I thought, well, maybe I better dig in here, because maybe it is a sin and I should be saying that more clearly. And so ironically, we were studying the book of Acts that year in that Bible study. And when we got to the story about Peter seeing the sheep come down from heaven with the clean and unclean animals and God saying, don't call anything that I have made unclean. And then he went to Cornelius's house, to a Gentile's home, and preached the gospel, and people were baptized. And then Peter went and talked to his friends who were like challenging him, like, why on earth would you let these Gentiles in? And he told them the story. And they said, oh, okay, well, if this is what you saw God do in the lives of these people, who are we to argue with that? And so that story really stuck with me in terms of, you know, Peter thought that he knew the law. He thought he knew God and he knew how to be a good believer, based on the law that he was given. And yet, some new experience came along and God showed him something different and he was open to being to learning that. And so that was really transformative for me. So ironically, the Bible study that was trying to kick me out was the Bible study where I read Acts with those new lenses and sort of came to a very different conclusion than what they wanted me to come to. And so through a lot of like reading and studying and praying over a lot of those passages that we've been told talk about homosexuality, praying and praying and asking God to show me like, what is it you want me to know from these passages? Is what the church is teaching me, what I should believe? Should I be relying more on the experience that I've seen in others? And because then by then I knew other gay Christians, and so it wasn't lining up with what the church had been teaching. And So I kind of went through that process, and really finally, after honestly like 2 decades probably of searching and trying to make sense of all that, I finally came to the conclusion that I don't believe, I didn't agree with what the church was teaching on same-sex marriage being a sin. So that was one of the big hurdles for me in terms of my calling, and that part of my life was sort of trying to make sense of all of that. So then I think, the next step in terms of my involvement with PFLAG, I guess I'll say what PFLAG is in case anybody doesn't know. It's a support and advocacy group for parents and friends of LGBTQ people. It's an international organization. They have chapters in every state and I think in 23 other countries. And so I went to an organic church conference. This was right after recognizing my call to ministry. And I realized as a result of the organic church conference, where we're talking about ways to organically be in relationships with people and have, the gospel be a thing that isn't necessarily right in the center of what you're doing, but it becomes a sacred space because someone who is following Christ is present and Christ isn't present through us. And so I realized, hey, I'm looking around Livonia, where I live, Livonia, Michigan, and seeing like there's nothing for LGBTQ people in terms of support here. And I really felt like God was saying, you know what, you need to see if you can start a chapter of PFLAG in your city. And so I put on Facebook in this group, that's sort of an all things Livonia group. People discuss things going on in our city. I said, does anybody have any interest in talking about starting a chapter of PFLAG? And people mainly that I didn't know were like, yeah, let's talk about it. Let's have a meeting. And so I think this was also, yeah, in 2018, a group of us got together and just sort of talked about, are we interested in starting a chapter? And we had to, PFLAG National was able to help us get going, but they said you have to appoint a president, a secretary, and a treasurer. That's part of the gig. And so there were people who stepped up that said they were willing to help, take leadership roles. And so we, started up all the red tape of, jumping through the hoops that the national organization had us doing. We had to, all the unsexy stuff like, applying for articles of incorporation, and we had to write our own bylaws and, just really boring stuff that I hate doing. We got all of that done. And so in 2019, we officially became a chapter. And so now we're on, PFLAG National's website. If you go and look for, like, find a chapter near me, Livonia, Michigan is on there. And so we meet once a month as a support group. And then we do some other activities in the community. We have like a family trunk or treat in June, since it's Pride Month, where we do like rainbow themed trunk or treat. And we've had opportunities to partner with Livonia Public Schools and some of their activities and their student organizations at the schools for queer kids. We've been able to like provide gift baskets for them and let them know, hey, we're here in case your parents need a place to process, send them to us. And so we've had families who've come to us who are like, well, my kid heard about you at school and they told me I should come to a meeting. So here I am. So yeah, so we've gotten involved, but that PFLAG was really a calling. It was part of what God was calling me to do. It wasn't just some cockamamie social worker idea that just, came out of nowhere. It was definitely part of my calling.
Yeah. And I mean, it really has grown. It's been great to see it. Whether it's just a handful, a lot of times, in the early days, it was just those of you who were the core team. And now to see more and more people involved. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. We've probably, between people who've come to our meetings and people who've reached out for us to have somebody to talk to, we've probably touched like 100 homes over the last four years. It is funny. We've had some people who come regularly for a while and then they kind of outgrow us. They're just like, they come in and they're a mess. They're freaked out because their kid's coming out. They don't know what to do. And after they've been with us for a while, like they're better and they don't need us anymore. So they kind of graduate. So our group, our meetings stay pretty small, But we have new faces almost every month. And then we'll have people who come for a while and then they kind of disappear. So it's been, you know, there's part of me that, like, we always quantify how successful we are by the numbers, right? Which is like the worst temptation to do that. So there's part of me that always wishes that there are like more people at each meeting, but, you know, there have been really sacred moments in small groups, you know, where people have been able to share the things that are of concern to them. And, you know, probably because it's a small group, we're really able to have intimate conversations and be a support to people. So, you know, there are times where there's our little core group, our little, you know, board members, there's four of us. And sometimes there's only like us plus two or three other people, you know, but it leads to some good things. There have been some really awesome things that have happened as a result of those meetings and those times together.
Yeah. Well, I know you're doing good work there. It's been great to see it. And then kind of like over the last few years, and I know for a lot of us, 2020, 2021 kind of forced us to do some deep dives, do some deconstructing. And, you know, at some point you felt like you could not be ordained in, you know, the denomination you started in, where I'm at for, I don't know for how long, but where I'm here now, and decided to transition to the United Methodist Church. And so we talk about, I guess, a couple of things, like why, but then also like why, because there are other denominations, right, that where you could have gone to. So you chose United Methodist over other options. But then also, like, what really, like, I know you kind of have wrestled with it from the beginning. What could I be ordained in this denomination or not? But, like, what were the kind of things that kind of pushed you to where you're like, no, if I'm going to be true to myself, kind of a thing, I got to move in this direction?
You know, I considered myself an ally, which I guess I didn't even tell the story about my own coming out and recognizing at 45 that I'm bisexual. That's a whole other story. But for a long time, I thought of myself as an ally. And, you know, there's the saying about if you consider yourself an ally and you're not getting hit by the stones, then you're not close enough. So I had really felt from the beginning that if I was going to stay in the Church of the Nazarene, which I knew was, I was not in agreement with their statement on sexuality, I felt like I either had to be able to be vocal about the fact that I wasn't in agreement, or I had to leave. Otherwise, I was just complicit in what I view as harm being done to LGBTQ people. And so I thought, I didn't really have a clear direction from God to leave at first. And in fact, you know, in our local church, for as small as it is, for a while, we had like a really disproportionate number of families who were dealing with kids who were coming out and kids who were questioning, you know, their sexuality or their gender identity. And so I had an awareness of like, these families need somebody, you know, they need some support. And the kids need representation. They need to see that you can be who you are and be loved by God. And so I didn't feel called to leave. I actually felt called to stay. And I thought, you know, as long as I can do what God has called me to do here, I will do it. You know, as long as I can be part of PFLAG, as long as I can, you know, be careful and thoughtful about what I say, but also not sell out the people that I'm called to minister to, I need to stay. And I think, you know, what was happening in our local church at that time, I needed to be there for them. So, you know, I grew up in the Church of the Nazarene. I've never been part of anything else. And so I didn't have any desire to leave, but I had a desire to see it do differently and do better by the LGBTQ community than what it was doing and what it has been doing and what's currently doing. And so I think, you know, when it stopped being the right place for me was when it became clear that I couldn't keep doing what God was calling me to do. I knew that I needed to move toward ordination. I knew that I needed to be able to continue to be part of PFLAG. I knew that I needed to be able to continue, you know, saying honestly what my thoughts were about the church's policy on sexuality. And, you know, it became clear after a meeting with people at the district level that, you know, if I couldn't, the two things that were thrown at me was I needed to reevaluate my involvement in PFLAG because their mission and vision is not in keeping with what the Church of the Nazarene teaches. And and then the other thing was I needed to be able to say that I was in full agreement with what was in the manual regarding sexuality. And I'm like, you know, two strikes. I'm not giving up PFLAG. It's part of what I've been called to be part of. And I'm not in agreement with what the manual says. And if I can't be honest about those things, I can't do what God's called me to do here any longer. And so that's why I chose to leave when I did. I felt like the call to ministry was so strong, and to be kind of, you know, the inference was I wouldn't really be considered a candidate for ordination if I stayed. And I was like, no, that's part of the calling. And I can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You know, I'm not a lay person anymore. You know, you even said you go back to being it because you were trying to get me to stay, which was very kind and I appreciated it. But you were like, you can go back to being a lay person. And I'm like, that's not, and I said, that's not who I am anymore. And it's not, you know, once you've recognized your call and are starting to lean into that, you can't really go back. So you asked why we chose the United Methodist Church. There were four places. Well, first of all, Wesleyan theology is super important to me. And I thought, I don't want to go to a church that, you know, is Calvinistic. That would just not set well with me. That's not who I am. I'm a Wesleyan through and through. And so that was important to me. And so there were four churches here in the area. There were three different United Methodist churches because they're everywhere. There were four different, those three Methodist churches, and there was an Episcopalian church here in Livonia. And so I said to my family, I want to visit these four churches, you know, sort of as we're figuring out where we're going to go next. And the particular church that we ended up at is Newburgh United Methodist. And I had driven past that church a lot. It's not that far from my house. We knew several families there from school. You know, the kids knew people from school, and piano students of mine go there and stuff. And for the last several years before I left the Nazarene church, I would drive past that church and I felt pulled, like a pull to it. And I even had a friend who knew what I was dealing with in the Nazarene church, and she could kind of see my days were numbered. And she had kind of really gently said to me, like, do you have a plan B if it doesn't work out with the Nazarenes? And I told her, yeah, there's this Methodist church called Newburgh United Methodist Church that I'm kind of interested in. And so I had sort of felt pulled to that church. So that was the first place we visited when we started looking for a new church. And like the following, and we all really liked it, and it just felt really at home there. And then the next Sunday I said, okay, so which church do you guys want to visit tomorrow? And they were all like, let's just go back to Newburgh. And so like 3 weeks of that. And, you know, my son, who was like, what, 15 at the time, he was like, well, I think Newburgh should just be our new church. And I said, well, how about if you and your sister, who's also a teen, is like, why don't you guys go to the youth group, get together and kind of see what you think of that before we decide where we're going to end up. And so they did. And then they really liked it. So then they had no interest, you know, in going anywhere else. And Jeff and I were like, okay, well, this feels good. It feels right. We're not sure. But if you have two teenagers who want to go there to church, like, that's where you're going to go. You know, if you know that your kids are willing to go with you to this church, then you're going to go to it, whether you want to be there or not. And, you know, the other question mark for me was, we learned right after we started attending there that the pastor had been reassigned. So he wasn't going to be the pastor there much longer. And so I'm like, what are we doing committing to go to a church where we don't even know who the new pastor is going to be? I knew I had a calling to ministry, and I was going to need a lead pastor who was going to be able to mentor me and advocate for me, you know, and build a relationship with me. And I'm like, I don't even know who they're going to get. What if it's not somebody who's very encouraging of women in ministry? Like, I didn't know anything, but I'm like, we'll go there because that's where the kids want to go, and God will just have to figure out the rest of it. And honestly, he sent us the best person. I couldn't have asked, and it's been so cool. I learned so much from working under you, and this guy's personality is so different. So I'm learning a whole bunch of different things from working under him. And it's been fantastic. He's, you know, a dad, he's a girl dad, you know, and so very pro women, very, very supportive, you know, has been really encouraging me. And, you know, after I came out of the Nazarene church, there was this time of self-doubt where I'm like, what am I doing? Did I make the right decision? Do I even belong in ministry? Is this really what God called me to? And he's been so, like, every time I've said or done something, you know, up front or whatever, he's been so affirming to me. Of this one Sunday, I got up and said some things before we started singing. And he said, I looked at my wife and said, oh, she's a pastor. And so, and that's the kind of affirmation he's just given me time after time, and is absolutely what I needed to sort of help rebuild my confidence and remind me of why I left this place that I was a part of for 48 years. You know, it just, I couldn't have asked for somebody better. So God had all of it figured out and lined up. And it just, there have been so many God moments in the last couple of years that it's just clear that God's been in the whole thing.
That's so cool. And, you know, about the time you left, ministry for me kind of turned into a whirlwind. So we haven't been able to talk about like those kind of things. So that's encouraging that it's been affirming, and God's continuing to do, you know, work, work for, continue to work in your ministry and stuff.
Yeah. And I guess, can I add this story? I almost forgot too.
Sure.
When I first met with the former senior pastor before he left, I told him about what I was doing in the Nazarene church. I told him about PFLAG, and he's like, we've been praying for somebody to come and sort of take up LGBTQ ministry. He said, you know, we had some families here that left because of the hard feelings in the Methodist church after that one vote. And so he said, I was saying, let's start a chapter of PFLAG. But he said, he goes, I'm not LGBTQ. Nobody on my staff is. And so he said, I didn't feel like we had anybody here to do that. And he said, we've been praying for somebody to come along who would be interested in doing that kind of ministry. And so it just made me laugh when he said, let's get a chapter of PFLAG here or something, you know? And I'm like, well, I can probably get a chapter of PFLAG here. You know? And we switched from meeting at the Nazarene church to meeting at the Methodist church. And so, you know, this past summer, Livonia had its first citywide pride event. And I got an invitation to attend as a member of PFLAG. We were invited to set up a table, but I found out that they were going to have several affirming churches there. And I asked if my church could come, if Newburgh could come, and they said, absolutely. And so I talked to the pastor and said, can we get a group? And he said, definitely. And he told me who to talk to. And the woman that he kind of put in charge of all of it has been at Newburgh forever. She knows everybody. She's like, oh, we have money in this budget here. What do you think we should do? What should we order? What do we need to buy? What do you need me to set up? Who do we? And I mean, she just did the whole thing. And there was like a team of probably 10 or 12 people from the church who showed up to represent Newburgh at Pride. And so it was one of those God moments again, where it was just like there were people who were ready for that ministry. They didn't have the hurdles of church politics that the Nazarenes had. And so they were just able to like jump in and just do it. And it was so cool to see how these folks were just waiting for somebody to kind of come along and open the door. And they just came through, you know, full force. And they've been awesome.
Oh, that's really cool. And I mean, that's like, for me, it was like when you left, it was disheartening. And then of course, you know, PFLAG followed you, which I figured it would once you figured out where you were going to land. And so there's always a part of me that felt like, man, I abandoned all of, which is, I can't talk about it too much. I get upset when I do. So
You felt abandoned, or you felt that you had
I felt
abandoned?
like I had abandoned, the people at PFLAG and even like your family and not just and so like hearing like the backside, now is like, okay, like, my role or whatever was to give you that leverage, and then somebody else was, to hand it off, so to speak, to the next person. And so to see you have another pastor come and receive the baton, so to speak, and then cheer you on and have a place for PFLAG in that ministry. It feels redemptive in a way, I guess.
I never felt like you abandoned me. I felt like you gave me wings. And I felt like when we were still at the Nazarene Church that you kept giving me tools, you know. I would say, I think, I need to try this. This is sort of something God's been talking to me about trying. And, a lot of it was LGBTQ related. And I knew that your hands were somewhat tied and just how much you could get involved. And so I always, kind of expect, not knowing you, I shouldn't have expected this, but I kind of always half expected you to go, all right, just go ahead and do it and don't tell me, just I'm gonna act like I don't know. That would have been like an understandable posture for what I was doing. And yet you were like, oh, well, here's a book on that. Oh, let me send you to this organic church conference. Let me, and you kept like giving me tools and equipping me. And you'd get angry calls from the district and you'd be like, okay, well, you didn't do anything wrong and you're not in trouble, but you just need to know I got this call. And where I said, do you need me to leave? And I wasn't angry. I was offering to get out of your way because I didn't want to make your ministry harder. And you just kept, giving me space, giving me tools, giving me encouragement. And so when I left, I felt like, you were very generous and letting me say goodbye to the congregation and being part of a sort of a long transition out. It was like 2 months from the time I told you I was leaving till we actually left. And so, you trusted me to not get up and say crazy things and make problems and, and let me say goodbye to people. And I felt like you gave me wings. I felt like you gave me such a good training ground. And it was sort of like, okay, little bird, I've done as much for you as I can. Leave the nest and go do your next thing. That's how I felt about it. I never felt like you abandoned me.
Well, that's good. But it's still good to hear the other side, though, of like where you landed, and like in some ways, it's almost like you didn't even skip much of a beat, right? Like you just all of a sudden there you were, and it was ready for you, and it was the right timing, yeah.
And it's really interesting because I, talked to a lot of people who have left ministry or left the Nazarene Church, for similar reasons. And a lot of them have kind of said, I don't know if I'll go back to church or I don't know if I'll be a pastor again. And I think there are a couple of things that I think for me were different. One is, I mean, I'm 50, but in ministry years, I'm really young. I'm really green. And so I don't think I've had the years of those painful experiences that kind of make you cynical and jaded. I haven't had those. I know that they're real and I know that they exist and I'm sure they're coming for me, but I haven't had them yet personally. And so I think in that way, I'm just so gung ho for what God's called me to do. And I still have sort of that newbie energy somewhat. I mean, it's been 5 years, but still it's still new. I'm still green. And so I think that's part of it. And I think also the fact that my kids are still living at home, getting them in church has been really important to me. And I have a feeling if they weren't here, I may not have been so quick to jump in somewhere else, but I felt strongly that we need to be part of a congregation and that I wanted them to be in church. And so I think those two things sort of pushed me to the next place. But also the fact that God opened the doors really quickly. And, for the first few months after I went to the Methodist church, I sat in the pew and cried every month or every week. It was probably 4 or 5 months before I even met with the pastor to say he knew I was coming from the Nazarene church and I had been a district licensed minister. but it was probably 4 or 5 months before I sat down with them to say, like, I'm in, what can I do? Can I get involved? I want to help with ministry here. It took me, some months of crying and just kind of getting over the pain of, getting divorced from the denomination I was with for 48 years. So it takes some time.
Yeah, I imagine it will take me some time too.
Yeah, well, and you had, in some way, it's like I've been a Nazarene longer than you have, but you've been way, way more invested in an intense way,
Right?
It'll take some time. Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine it will. I haven't come up with like a closing question for the new podcast. I have one for the old podcast. Let's do this. In your most recent transition, since you're still pretty fresh in this transition of one denomination to the next, and what's been the most influential, I guess, for your for you spiritually, like spiritual growth wise and faith wise?
Say the question again.
What's been like the most influential in your spiritual growth or your faith growth? Like, how are you nurturing that? Or what is it? Maybe there's just been an experience that you've had in particular that's kind of been, this is what kind of propelled me to the next, don't want to say next level because that sounds weird,
Yeah.
but yeah, this was just kind of propelling you forward or deeper in your
Yeah.
spirituality.
I think in terms of that transition, there were a couple like significant moments that stood out to me. And of course, they're all related to music because I'm a musician. But the first Sunday that we visited the Methodist Church, like last Sunday, we said goodbye to the Nazarenes. This Sunday, we don't have a church home, And so we went to the Methodist Church and they sang the hymn, "The Church's One Foundation is Jesus Christ, Her Lord." And I was reminded that the church is bigger than a denomination, that Jesus works in a lot of places, in a lot of ways, and through a lot of people. And, we can have our denominational differences, but all the things that hymn talks about, being a new creation in Christ, from heaven he came and sought her to be his holy bride. With his own blood he bought her, and for her life he died. We have all that in common. And so it was a reminder to me that God was still at work, no matter where I was at, whether it was a Nazarene church or a Methodist church or sitting out on the beach by myself. God's at work, and God does amazing things in many different places. So that was one of the transition moments for me that was really big, and it's been encouraging to me ever since. And I think the other one was, I guess, a little more personal than that. That was the Sunday that I realized this is when I need to make that appointment with my new pastor and get involved here where I'm at. He had preached on the end of John when Jesus is asking Peter, "Do you love me? Then feed my sheep." And I felt like that whole sermon was for me, of God saying, like, okay, you've been sitting on the bench for a while. It's time to be more involved in feeding my sheep. And so at the end of the service, they sang a song. The Methodists sing it a lot. I don't know if the Nazarenes do. It's called "Here Am I." It's "Here Am I, Lord. Is it I, Lord? I can hear you calling in the night. I will go, Lord, where you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart." And I just sobbed through that. So, I mean, just it wasn't like teary-eyed and emotional. It was like sobbing. And I was glad people were singing loud because they probably would have heard me otherwise. But that moment was just really, really precious to me. And then I realized later, I don't know if they do this every year, but that year they actually sang that song at their ordination service. The Michigan Conference did, as the ordinands were walking in. And so I'm like, I don't know if they sing that song every year, but I hope they do, because someday I want them to sing that song for me, because it was so cool. It was just a moment of awareness that God was affirming, you know, you're in the right place, and this is the next place, this is the next setting for ministry for you.
Yeah.
Did
Wow.
that answer your question? I don't know if that was a good answer or not.
Yeah, that's
Okay.
awesome. I love that. I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on
Sure.
the new podcast.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. That was fun to talk about all that stuff. I'm like,
Cool.
I feel like I did way too much talking compared to what you did, but
It's okay.
okay.